No, actually, it was that good. So it just is long, long night. So,
Yeah. Well, no
all
wonder we had to.
right.
You're like, let's start at noon. I'm like, damn, dude, that's late.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay. So, how's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Toddcast. I know we're not on Thursday, but yesterday was a bit of insanity. I had a concert to go to. I had to drive to. Let me just explain my day. Okay, just know that the concert thing is part of the end, right? So, I started my day where I had to get up at 6 and drive to Frostburg, Maryland, which is like, well, like a little over 2 hours, right? Then, I go to, or then I drive back. I get back around 1 o'clock, and my plan was to just take a nap, right? You know, like three stores needed something immediately just at that time with some good timing. So, about 2 o'clock, I took a nap. At 3 o'clock, I picked up my friend who's going to the concert with me, and we're meeting Todd and one of his friends to go to the show. So he's like, "Meet me at Fox Chapel's Marina." And in my brain, I'm going, "Okay, well, either A." So what are three things happened at this point in my brain? I go, one, we're going on Jason's boat because our buddy Jason has a lives up around there, and I was like, he would be the kind of guy that has a boat. Two, Todd bought a boat. Or three, there's a building right by the marina that Todd went, "Oh, hey, this is where we're moving the store." Yeah, the very first thing is what happened. Like, we ended up going on Jason's boat. So
Okay.
we take the boat from Fox Chapel down to Stage AE, and there's a lock in the middle of it, kind of near like where the Highland Park Bridge is. It's like underneath the Highland Park Bridge. So you have to get there, let them know you're coming, and then they adjust the water level to get you either up or down going wherever you need to. Mind you, this lock closes at midnight. Okay. They really, because it takes like 20 minutes to do the lock, like, they really don't like people coming in after 11. Keep that in mind. Okay. So, go to the concert, or get down there, grab something to eat at Tom's Watch Bar, which is, you know, a favorite. Everybody, weirdly, everyone got the same thing, which was fine, but it was just kind of weird. So everyone got the prime rib dip, which is what they're known for and is amazing. So we get that. We go to the show. We get there just in time for Lisa Loeb's third song. So Todd's super excited because he loves Lisa Loeb. He told our friend Jason about how she was the voice of Mary Jane in the MTV Spider-Man show that where oh, what the hell was his name? Neil Patrick Harris was actually Spider-Man's voice for that. It was like the one that was like
Oh.
really like cell animation, right? Like computer generated. So anyway, there.
The bad animated version.
I didn't really care for it. I thought it was okay, but it was fun. It wasn't great.
It was
So
that
anyway,
era of that,
yeah. So Todd and Jason are yelling, "You're Mary Jane," at her, and she stops the show and actually says, like, "That's right, I was Mary Jane, and so do I call you Spider-Man?" Not remembering that Todd actually brought her into the show or into one of the stores at one point because she was the voice of Mary Jane. Like back 25 years ago, which doesn't surprise me at all. Anyway, she crushed it. Then Gavin DeGraw came out, and it was kind of boring. I said to my buddy Brian, I was like, I feel like this is Like, I feel like he is the poor man's Harry Connick Jr. He's that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, because he had that, like, kind of, like, New Orleans jazzy type vibe thing going on, but it was kind of meh. Yeah. So then OAR came out, right? Well, in between Gavin DeGraw and OAR, I go to the merch booth, right? And because I saw on our way up to the part of the yard we were standing in, this hockey jersey for OAR, because it was their 30th anniversary tour. And I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. I want to know how much that is. So I get down there, I'm like, it's $300. I'm like, no. Ooh. Not doing that. No. So I get a t-shirt. I get a t-shirt, and the other thing I buy is a Lisa Loeb bucket hat for Todd. It's a white Lisa Loeb bucket hat, right? So I give it to him, and he's like, oh, this is great. It'll be my new gardening hat. And I'm like, no, man, I want you to wear that at cons. I want you to wear that everywhere. Like, you know, and he's just like, no. So he wears it the rest of the night. I take a couple pictures of him in it. I sent one to Scott, so if you want to see what it looks like, he can show you. So anyway, OAR rocks, like, the whole freaking night. They did 2 hours and 15 minutes by themselves. No intermission, like, just giant amount of stuff tonight. They played all the hits that I wanted to hear. They played a cover of Plush by Stone Temple Pilots. And of course, closed with Crazy Game of Poker. So, when I was in college, OAR was, they were one of the bands that, I got introduced to by one of my friends. So at the end of every party we had at our house, we would play Crazy Game of Poker to basically be like, get the hell out of our house. Because it's like 8.5, 10 minutes long, and people would, like, about 3 minutes in, be like, man, this song's really long. And then at, like, 6 minutes, they're like, fuck this, I'm out. So it cleaned out the house for us. It's quite good. So I was having, like, a bit of flashbacks from that. But, you know, they played a lot of other stuff. They played Love and Memories. They did Shattered. They did I Feel Home. I Go Through. They did a lot of stuff that I really loved. And it was a great show. So, but so the concert ends at 11. Okay. Now, mind you, I just said they don't really like people going through the lock after 11 o'clock, but it is technically open till midnight. Right. Yeah. So we get in the boat and we just fucking gun it the whole way up the river. At this point, it is like 58 degrees out on the river.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure we hit a buoy at some point. So get up there. The guy's like, God damn it. Like like we actually heard him say, like, God damn it. Fine. Let me do the gates. So he does the first gate. We come in and they like rope you to the side so that you're not like flopping around in there. So we get to the point where it's filled up and the guy's just like, listen, man, like, I'm going to open this door and then you can just gun it. We're like, what? So the lock's not very wide, right? So when you gun it, like, the waves that are coming out of the motor end up being these giant waves that, like, crash up on the sides. So it was really cool to look at and see this thing happen. And anyway, so we got back. I didn't get home after dropping my buddy off. I didn't get home till, like, 12:45. And then I couldn't sleep because I was all pumped up from the show still. So last week I started watching Naomi, which is based on the DC Comics character show, written by Brian Michael Bendis. I think I only ever read the first issue, but I was like, eh, I'll check it out. I know it only went one season, so whatever. And it's actually a really good show. Like, I was kind of sad that it's only gotten one season. But it is very, like, mystery-based type thing. Because, like, she doesn't know where she's from. She has powers, but she doesn't know how to use them. There's a Thanagarian in there, basically a Hawkman, and he's awesome. And just the acting is just good. Like, it's just very good. It kind of has, like, a little bit of an X-Files vibe, because the military is, like, hunting them down. So I really thought that was cool. But definitely check it out. I have, like, 2 episodes to go. I might go back and read the graphic novel at that point. Okay. My wife, on the other hand, I came home the other night to find her watching Heroes. And I was like, are you really watching Heroes? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, this might be the hottest thing I've ever seen. Because she is not into that kind of stuff at all. Yeah. And I've watched Heroes like 3 or 4 times, right? I love that show. I thought it was great.
It was pre-Marvel, before Marvel got full steam. So that was like the first, I don't want to say first like ever, but first real superheroes exposed to the public. Like, yeah, the general public. And that it did catch on. It was a trend for what, about 2 years? Like, that first season was so good. The second season was good, but you started seeing the downcline. Third and fourth seasons were garbage.
The fourth season wasn't that bad. The fourth season was better than season 3. Season 3 was the writer's strike season, and it was real bad.
Yeah.
Four wasn't too bad. Yeah.
They tried to rebound, and it did not work well.
Yeah, like, yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah, except that we got to see Ray Park be this awesome knife-throwing dude in the circus, because that was the fourth season was a circus of all these dudes. I never watched the reboot of that show, though, but, Heroes Reborn.
I never saw that. So.
Yeah, I think it only went 1 season, maybe 2 at most, but it was good. So, but anyway, all of that is the reason why we're doing the show right now. And why I have titled this episode "Getting Too Old for This," because being up from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. with a 30-minute cat nap in the middle, not recommended.
I was a little worried because I totally forgot about the concert, because I swear we were going to be on normal time, but apparently I was totally I switched up the wrong weeks, because I messaged you. I'm like, damn, he's taking a while, because I was sitting there and I'm like, I was kind of grogged out a little bit because I took a nap as well. And I got up and I'm like, it's about that time. I was like, the pets are watching me. They were all snuggled on me, and they didn't like the fact that I had to get up and get on the computer. And then I messaged you and you're like, at concert. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. And then next week, remember, next week is karaoke. So we'll be early next week too. But it'll be on Thursday, but it'll just be early.
Yeah.
So, it was a good time. I also finally got my other 2 Sora covers, from Sora. Yeah. So this one's pretty sexy. It's the foil one. That's why it's shiny. And then this is just the virgin cover, cause she already gave me the one with the regular trade dress. So I finally got those. She's out in San Diego pimping her new variant cover out there, and having a blast. Yeah,
that's where everybody's at right now. All the announcements from San Diego is very reminiscent of when everything was hitting on all cylinders here for pop culture and comic. We got all sorts of announcements and new trailers. Like, what? I saw the trailer for the Clayface movie. That actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of low-key want to see where this is going to go. Of course, this is going to be part of the let's say, is this going to be Sparkly the Empire Batman?
Yes.
Universe? Yes. Yeah.
It's the Pattinson universe, yeah.
The Pattinson, yeah, Pattinson, yeah. Okay, that's what I figured, because I'm like, that seems very straight, you know. And I'm looking.
Well, remember, it was originally supposed to be a miniseries like The Penguin, but it then just got turned into a movie. So
we'll see how it goes then. We got what the new? We got a new improved version of the Spidey trailer, a little bit more flushed out. It looks cool. Like, yeah. I'm kind of looking forward low key for the Hulk Spidey fight. That should be pretty interesting. Right. I don't think it's going to be like a huge, long, drawn out fight. But if it's as entertaining as Hulk versus Hulkbuster Iron Man, I will be delightfully happy with that. We even got a new drawn out version of Nightfall as well, the Nightfall trip. Which we got a little bit more fleshed out on the where they're going to go, and it looks like they're going to do the whole shebang, like Bane's like origin and everything by the looks of it. So they're taking everything and they're going to put it in on this, at least part one, because it's going to be a three part. They're going to do three movies for this, so. Yeah,
I think they're doing it as like the three like almost omnibus trades of it are, like the three compendium versions. Like, so it's Nightfall, Night Quest, Night's End, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's how they're gonna do that. So
yeah, I keep an ear out, because I'm gonna do a podcast with is it James?
I mean, Zach?
Yeah. Yes, Zach Thompson. Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I get everybody's name all confused. Like, we
apparently,
talked to
you're also getting too old for this.
Yeah, that too. I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I only just met Zach, like, this year, too. So it's... When I meet somebody brand new, it's going to take me a little bit. You know, now if it's somebody that we're always interacting with, that makes it a heck of a lot easy.
Right.
But we've had a busy week so far with announcements. You know, new X-Men this week was fun. A little bit of Grant Morrison action through this episode.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we could deal with that like at the end of the pod here. We had some tragic celebrity deaths the last like week and a half here. First one that comes to mind is Jennifer Finch. For those who don't know who she is, she used to be the bassist for L7. She also played bass for Courtney Love too, so she was that era of female guitar punk ladies. She died of brain cancer like 5 days after she announced she had brain cancer. She's been battling it. She was 59. We lost Mitch Bird, who worked on Warrior, Starman, and Gen X. He passed away, 63. Didn't really say like how he died, but it just said he passed on. So, and then we lost Kaylin Hotley to a car accident. She was only 18. And for people who don't know who she was the one who played the young girl that befriended King Kong in the Godzilla Kong movies.
Yep.
So tragic on that. It's a shame to see somebody cut in their youth.
Right. So,
Yeah, those are all the ones that stuck out in my mind as far as celebrities go. I don't think there was anybody of super note beyond that.
Right. Yeah. Also, last weekend we went to see the Danny Elfman show at PSO.
We did.
That was freaking awesome. We gave out a ton of free comics to people. We saw a bunch of people we knew. And it was absolutely a great concert. If you guys think, oh, the symphony's just a bunch of like classical music and stuff, but it's not. It's actually, they do a lot of modern stuff. And they do a lot of cool guest stuff like this. Because Elfman was there. They premiered a bunch of pieces. I could not believe they only this year, 25 years later, premiered the Spider-Man theme, like from the Raimi Spider-Man movies. Because that just blows my mind.
It's appropriate with the new start of the new adventures of Spider-Man coming up. You might as well, you know, reach in and give a little nostalgic bump there. He was fun. He interacted with the audience. My wife was giddy as hell. She was happy. It was fun. Everybody who worked there, super professional, super nice. Harrison and his wife, Rachel, shout out to them. Everybody, Rachel also. They sat there and took pictures with the kids that came in,
and adults.
And adults. But definitely for the kids, though. The kids got super excited when they saw him in his Batman outfit. Some of the guys, like a lot of the guys, got like excited too. But I think the kids won out in the end on that one. Saturday was hot. Like, we were sweating. I felt bad for Harrison. He was just...
Oh, he was pouring. Sunday at least was tolerable, though.
Sunday
was at least tolerable.
It was fun, like, sitting there interacting with people. People were excited to get free stuff. People forgot that Danny Elfman did Spider-Man, and you know that he's done so much that it is easy to forget like what he has composed the years.
I always forget that he did the Simpsons theme, like, but they closed with it, so
they closed with it. That was fun. What was it? He did Frankenweenie. Of course, he did Nightmare Before Christmas, which actually was probably the best part. Is he actually sang all the Jack Skellington's parts, and but he also did his own version of Oogie Boogie, which got a round of applause. Everybody was sitting in a theater. He appreciated it very much. He took, you know, selfies with the crowd. He was giving people high fives. You know, he seemed like a very gracious man. Enjoying
absolutely
the performance, and he gave, you know, it was him. I forget what the violinist's name is, so I apologize for not knowing her name, but god damn was she talented. She did a lot of good solo stuff. He wrote stuff for her to play for the performance, so you know, that is something, I personally never experienced. Like I said, it was the first time I ever attended Heinz Hall in my life. So,
Heinz Hall does more than just the symphony, though. But it's mostly symphonic work and choral work. So, like I said, if you've never been to a symphony, go. Just check it out. It's pretty affordable, actually, which is also good. The parking... The parking downtown for that was jacked up because of Picklesburg. But normally it's not that high. It was like $30 for the whole day. It was kind of rough. But if you're there the whole day, so if you go down for Picklesburg and then stay for the symphony, cool. but I definitely recommend people going to the symphony at least once or twice in their life. It's just a different vibe. And they do a lot of these cool, like, scoring things. Like, I've seen Superman scored while they actually show the movie and they play the score underneath it. I also saw that for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which was really cool. And then next,
Lord of the Rings.
Well, they just did Lord of the Rings like 3 weeks ago. And then, but I didn't go to that one. But they're doing every year they do a Star Wars movie for May the 5th. Next year it's actually at the end of May though. So, but they're doing that, and then they're also doing another one in February that's Star Wars related too. I think it's The Mandalorian in February. So, but it's still very cool. Definitely recommend people go check it out. You know, and if nothing else, it's a nice little date night. There's a lot of great restaurants right there.
Yes.
There's a taco place that crushes it across the street. You're real close to Market Square. Yeah.
Yeah, like me and Rachel, we stayed at a hotel there, right there at Market Square.
Yeah.
Just because we didn't want to be stuck in traffic and be late and everything else. It was just easier for us because we live further away than you do. So, you know, we're like, we might as well stay, enjoy the, make it a nice weekend and, you know, help with the event. So.
Right. All right. We'll get into comics here in a second, but as we do that as a transition, so I'm not going to review these books, but I bought these blind bags because I was like, I really hate these things, but I was like, I want to see what the hype is about. So I bought a Ninja Turtles 300 one and a boys one. Okay. So I'm going to do the boys one first. You get 3 books in this thing, right?
Okay.
So I got a variant reprint of number one, because that's the name of the game, number one. It's a virgin cover. I got a reprint of number two, which is kind of cool. And then I got a reprint of number five. Okay. So I got three books in this blind bag. Now let's talk about the Turtles one. $7 for this blind bag, I get one book. And it's the Frank Miller version cover, which I'm not a big Frank Miller fan, current Frank Miller fan. Back in the day, he was great. This, not so much. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know that they are really worth a lot. Like, worth buying. But the boys one, I was like, all right, that's cool. Like, I'll check it out because I love the boys. I was really kind of hoping for some kind of real crazy, like, triple X kind of cover in there because that's the kind of shit the boys do. But nope, they were very good covers. But that Ninja Turtles one, man, like, I'm so disappointed in that.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. You know, it's we're in the cash grab era of modern books, apparently. You know, it's I want to like them. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I want to like that kind of stuff. But the problem is you never, I'm all for the, you don't know what you're going to get, but I don't want to pay $7 for a book, you know, anymore.
Right.
No one wants to pay that for a regular book. You know, yeah, you're paying $7 for a, what might be something worth, you know, that Frank Miller might run something fun. You know, that Frank Miller has hardcore fans. So you might make your money up for that. But if you get one of the lesser variants that no one cares about, you're stuck with it. You know, and that's, we still have what, the 616 Doom cover stuff. That, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at least with that one, it's interesting because it's like, some of the books in there are older books, like, and they're just older variants that Marvel had laying around. Like, I ended up getting like a $30 Peach Momoko Fantastic Four cover out of that. But I actually bought it because I was like, well, I already own regular Doom Quest. The Doom Quest that's in here is going to be a black and white version. I think that's kind of cool. So I bought it for that and was like, oh, cool. I get an extra cover. And I'm like, oh, this cover's not bad.
Yeah.
So, but. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing. So, all right, let's move on to comics that came out that we're reviewing. Boom. Yay, I go first. All right, so this is Swamp Thing 89, number 4, a.k.a. number 91. This is the last part of the original Swamp Thing Vertigo run. So it starts out, this book starts out where Swamp Thing and Abby are in a parallel universe in a big treehouse. You know, the babies went to bed, and Abby just wants to hear more about his time-traveling adventures. So he basically told her about how he kind of forced himself into a amber crystal. It kind of goes to a head of where they left off in the last one, where Arcane is trying to take the baby, Constantine shows up and like throws the amber at him with this like broken off hand that he has. Abby picks up the amber, her ring then turns into a full version of Swamp Thing, as he has now come back to life. And he, because he has gone and met Jesus and the Source Wall, he no longer has fear or evil or hatred. And because of that, it, like, diffuses Arcane's body that he was gifted from the devil. So, basically, his head is just laying there, and Swamp Thing walks away to help deliver the baby. Constantine turns the hand into a giant middle finger, shoves the fingers through Arcane's head, or eye sockets, gives it to his minion, is like, take this back to hell and give the guy a message for me. So they have a little boy, they name him JC. Then Metron shows up and is basically like, just so you know, Darkseid knows about your kid and is probably going to come and try to, you know, take your kid's power. So they ask Constantine to help, because they basically are like, we don't want to have to deal with hiding and running around all the time. So Constantine goes back and talks to the Spectre and calls it a favor. So this is post-crisis, mind you. So he basically is like, can you take them back in time and put them on a different Earth and swap them out for one of the Earths that was going to be destroyed, and those Swamp Thing and Abby can come out and be here for a while they switch spots? And he's like, will this clear all of our debts? He's like, sure. So that's kind of what happens. Like, they walk outside and the Spectre shows up, and you know, he drops off the other Abby and Swamp Thing and takes them to this new planet or new alternate dimension. And you get to see Swamp Thing kind of playing with his son a little bit. It's just kind of like that. Like, it's like way back in time too. So like, people are living in huts. It was really good. I love the fact that there are, you know, like promo stuff for stuff that was coming out at that time. So here, like Green Lantern Emerald Dawn is in here, Superman Archive Volume 1. You know, like it's just nuts how good this is. Arkham Asylum was premiering around that time. I really love this book. I'm a big Swamp Thing guy, and I am going to go with Nine Inch Nails' Head Like a Hole for this one. That's pretty much what I'm doing, and it's a lot of fun. So,
all right, We have Corpse Night number 4. It seems like this journey, like where we ended up being here at Corpse Night, is coming to an end here as the Corpse Knight and his daughter continue to travel. And they finally find where Joan of Arc is. Well, she's battling the English, where they finally end up. So they're literally at a war front. And what the girl does is she actually sets herself to be bait. And as the English are about to kill her, here comes her dad, and he just slaughters, you know, everybody. You know, that's what he does. And they actually turn about and fire their own catapults at the English, actually helping Joan of Arc and her forces rally, and they win the battle. Well, one of her lieutenants, we're not really told exactly what he is, but he is like one of her trusted associates, comes up to the girl, and he's like, you know, he's like, hey, that was a pretty, you know, pretty interesting way of, you know, like, you know, giving her a compliment on battling and strategy, and, you know, and she's like, we need to see this Joan of Arc. And he's like, can we see her? And he's like, well, you helped us win this battle, so of course. So we finally meet Joan of Arc. The daughter explains what's, you know, hey, we've traveled a long way. We heard you do miracles, and my father needs one because this affliction that he has is making him less and less of who he is. And it's shown throughout the book and even in this issue that he is starting to, you know, his body's starting to shut down because this zombification or whatever it is, or whatever you want to call it, is not permanent. It's not, the magic is waning, so to speak. And Joan of Arc is like, well, we'll try. And you think she's going to heal him? No, as soon as she takes off the helmet, she's like, this is an affront to God and must be put down. This is a mercy for him. So basically, you end the book of her screaming no, as they chop him up, take his head, and that is the end of this issue. We kind of all knew that this was going to lead up to this point, that it wasn't going to be a happy ending. I can't wait to see what the next issue is for this. I chose Judas Priest the Ripper.
Nice.
As the representation for this book. I feel it fits the theme of the, you know, the betrayal and the, you know, this is how you thank somebody who saves you. So it looked pretty good.
Nice. All right, my next book is Captain Marvel Dark Past. This is the penultimate issue of this miniseries by Paul Jenkins, and it has been phenomenal. If you really like, if you like Carol Danvers, this is a really good book to read. So she's stuck in this psychic bubble thing with the bad guy known as just Desecrator, who's kind of her cousin, I guess. So she's falling through memories. She sees herself in the Warbird outfit, which is the black one with the yellow stripe. She shows up at her house. She goes into the house, and her dead brother, who went to the military, is there. And they try to blame... He tries to blame her on it. And then you see that it's actually Desecrator. So she gets kicked out of that. And then it's her mom talking to her and kind of giving her a bit of... like, she's like... The part that I thought was really interesting was she goes, "You have all this opportunity to change the world, Carol. To be a shining beacon on the hill for our kind, for the Kree, for women everywhere, and this is what you decide to wear." And then all of a sudden she's in the Warbird black, like, unitard type thing, and she's like, my suit's Kree tech, conforms to my mental telemetry, so if you knew that, or you would have known that if it was really you." So punches mom, turns into Desecrator. Then she's falling again and falls and ends up in the garage where her dad is like screaming at her about her brother being dead. All the while this is happening, the Avengers are outside dealing with the Wrecking Crew and trying to figure out how to get into this psychic bubble thing, which Scarlet Witch is having a hell of a time trying to do. So Carolyn talks to her dad, and then gets pushed into another memory, but this time it's Desecrator's memory, and you get to see him at different parts of his life, basically being beaten and abused by his grandmother, because they're part of a church that was very abusive. It was like a cult. And then he's mad that Carol's dad left. That was his Uncle Joe, and she's like, "Yeah, you're right. Like, that sucks, and he shouldn't have done that," and blah blah blah. And then at the end of it, she's falling one more time into these memories, trying to save Desecrator. And the Avengers are just outside, kind of hopelessly staring at stuff. That she tries to help Desecrator get out of that, and he tries to stab her with a knife, and that's where it's stuck at. And then the conclusion is next issue. I really love this. The art's fantastic. The writing's great. I like it because it's touching on all different parts of her past. I had a song for this and I lost it. I'm gonna go with Motion City Soundtrack's "Tell Me That You're All Right," because for someone going through all this shit, you kind of need that, and it's a great song too if you've never heard it. So, but definitely check it out.
Right, we're doing Final Boss number 8. We get like another flashback to the ancient temple that Tommy's grandfather found during World War II. We get a little bit more of the origin of these mysterious powers and abilities that all these fighters were seeing were coming from. We get a map of the world with symbols of different gods. And these aren't like normal traditional gods, I guess. They're not Greek gods. They're not, they're not Egyptian gods. They're not anything like that where it's tied to ethnicity or anything. It's pretty basic. Like, there's a god of weather, there's a god of, you know, beasts, stuff like that, each with their own unique symbol, each in a different area. So we're getting a little bit more of the background of the lore. then we kind of flash forward to current day. Tommy and his friend, his coach, are chatting in a diner where they get confronted by a masked vigilante again. This time they actually talk about, hey, I gotta let you know about what's going on. And Tommy and his friend are like, look, we're just concentrating on fighting this tournament. We don't care about the details or the rest of the stuff. But Matt Vigilante is like, you should, because you are an important part of this. But Tommy's like, well, tell us after this next fight, because I have to fight like in an hour. So they're fighting these lizard guys. Well, this lizard, his next opponent is a lizard guy, but his gang is also a bunch of lizard people. And the fight starts between Tommy and Dread God, is what he calls himself. But as the fight is going on, his friend gets kidnapped by the gang of the opponent, who are also, like I said, lizard people. And to be fair, his friend is no slouch himself. He beats the piss out of about five or six of these guys before one of them actually gets them down. And that's pretty much the end of this book. I feel like this is slowing down a little bit. Still enjoying the art. I want to be, you know, I want to say maybe this is the one downslide of issue, I guess. The story where we kind of hit a wall. But you still get important information and everything tied to the overall story. I chose You Can't Bring Me Down by Suicidal Tendencies. So.
Okay. It's sad that this is slowing down, because I thought the first couple issues of this book were really good. So.
Yeah. Well, it's, like I said, I guess they're starting to give us more background. So maybe, right. You know, we can't get a fight in every issue, or every issue can't, or every fight can't be a single issue if we're done and move on to the next. So, I will continue to read and see how much further this goes.
Cool. All right, my next book is Star Trek Red Shirts, Ghosts of the 21st Century. So this is kind of a later continuation of the last volume. So this starts out with the Romulan Shadow Council called the Dagger, and the tip of the spear is the Romulan that was in charge of getting the Starfleet spy, which he then finds out through that guy that one of the guys on this council is actually a Vulcan spy. So if you don't know, Vulcans and Romulans are basically the same, except Romulans don't conform to the spirituality and intellect stuff focus that the Vulcans do. They're more of a emotional version of a Vulcan. So anyway, he kills this guy right on the table, and he tells him about how he has this spy and how he saved him. So that guy, the guy from the original story, is now a captain, and he is looking for kind of like people like himself to be kind of put into a ship where they will do stuff with him. And so they're on the space base, like on the edge of space, and the one guy, Ensign Harry Dubert, is who they focus on with this one. So he's trying to get with this Andorian called Lena. She's another ensign. Andorians are the blue guys with the antennas on their heads. So she's like, sure, one last chance, don't be late, date tomorrow. So they get sent to this planet to do what they thought was a science mission. Here, the captain, or the commander, Ritko, was actually smuggling diamonds and latinum. And they get there, and these guys attack them. Like, it's a super ambush. Everyone dies but Ritko, because a Matago came in and, like, just annihilates everyone. Like, there's, like, he's literally, like, squishing someone's head apart and, like, ripping people apart. The Matago, or Magados, are the giant white apes with the big horn. We've seen them in the last version of this. We've seen them in classic Star Trek. So he gets the shuttle back to the space station, and the ensign, that the new ensign guy that we talk about, the Dubert guy, he missed the mission because he was, I'm pretty sure he was drunk and he just slipped through it. So the commander comes back and he's like, go clean this out. Right now he's like, I want to be able to eat off it. And he looks in there and it just, all of his friends are just like ripped apart. And he then punches his commanding officer, knocks him out, tries to call security, and the captain, from the original book, intercepts the call and is basically like, "You can't do, like, don't do that." He's like, "I've met devils at the gates of hell," you know, like that kind of thing. Like he's basically like, don't do that. And then he says, you're a dead man, Dubert. So Dubert then is about to kill Ritko, and the Andorian girl kicks in, is like, he's like, are you early for the date? And she's like, dinner's canceled. And then you find out she's actually an Andorian security service, and has been tracking the criminal activity for quite some time. Saw the shuttle. She's like, you're under arrest. You're going to testify everything. And he's like, what? And she's like, you know, tells the Andorian guys, like high command, that she's like, one down, way more to go. Miller's taken down his last score and killed his last red shirt. So that's how this first issue ends. Just as good as the last one. This is by Jerry Dugan. Arts by the same guy who did the last one. I really enjoy this, mostly because, you know, the tropes of Star Trek and the red shirts dying first all the time and like being just super expendable. I just really think it's crazy. So I'm gonna go with Bullet for My Valentine, Scream, Aim, Fire. For this one, also this reminds me of a slight joke. So last night when we're at the concert, and Todd and I were talking about how, you know, both his brother Scott and our Scott were the original people coming with us. Neither of them could make it, and he was like, "Oh man, if Scott Smith could have came, we should have all worn our Three Rivers shirts." And I said, so what, we would have just given Jason a red shirt and he would have just been off to go die? And he's just like, yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh my god, that's hilarious. So, I was like, Todd made a funny. So, but it was pretty good, so.
Alright. We got Wolverine number 24. Last issue, we found out that the reason why Wolverine... healing factor is not up to par is because he has a virus connected to Dr. Murata. And the virus is also in the good doctor, but whenever he gets confronted, basically he transforms into like this blue cybernetic version of the Hulk. Which is cool. I can kind of understand that to a degree. But Wolverine tries to, you know, calm him down and typical Hulk fashion, Hulk did not, you know, listen, except when there's a picture of the good doctor's wife. He gets hit with the Betty syndrome, so to speak, where he kind of calms himself down and starts talking normally instead of just grunting, and he runs away, and Wolverine recovers. He's trying to figure out where to find the good doctor, and while this is going on, we get a little glimpse of the origin of the doctor and his wife and how the situation came to be, which it's fascinating. A little on the nose with certain quotes, but what can you do? Wolverine tracks him down to this path leading up to a cabin in the woods, because of course, and Wolverine confronts him. The doctor is basically normal, but he tells Wolverine, "You can't break my concentration. I'm fighting everything. I'm fighting this virus the best I can, but if I lose concentration," he turns back into this cybernetic Hulk. Just when things are going so well, here comes Alpha Flight to screw everything up, and they start fighting. They try to capture the doctor, making the doctor lose concentration, and turns into he's called Mor, M-O-R. Mm-hmm. And he's basically kicking Alpha Flight's butt, and Wolverine's trying to talk to them, and of course nobody listens to Wolverine when he's when he's trying to be he rushes in and just kills things, and that's all he does. Well, he's sitting there trying to tell them, "Hey, guys, let's not do this, because this is gonna, it's gonna be bad." Well, of course, they sit there and they're trying to beat him up. He gets knocked out for a few minutes, and he wakes up and notices that the mountain trail that they're on, the mountain is actually a sleeping volcano, and the volcano is starting to wake up as we see magma and lava start to flow. And Wolverine tries to warn Alpha Flight, but that's about where the book ends. We'll see where it happens there. I chose the song for this book, "My Curse" by Killswitch Engage.
Nice.
I feel like that's appropriate for the curses, for sure. The viruses, and all that fun stuff is appropriate. So that's the way that goes.
Cool.
Like I said, lots of pop culture references. You can now watch He-Man on Amazon. So just to let you guys know, it is out on Amazon. And actually, guess who messaged me last night after watching it?
Who?
One of our mutual friends.
Matt,
yeah. He's nice. Like, "Dude, this is so awesome." He's like, "When's She-Ra coming out?" And I'm like, "They haven't announced that yet. We'll hear more about it probably."
Wow. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm actually excited to watch it with my buddy James, because he's going to point out all of the Easter eggs in case I miss one. Because he saw it 8 times in the theater.
Yeah.
8 times. Although part of me is now going, and that's kind of what I was like kind of looking at while you were doing your parts was, I'm trying to figure out if there is a time next week that works out to see Spider-Man before karaoke.
Yeah, since we're down there,
but,
might as well.
But after we do the podcast, right? So so we either have to go and be there like super early and just hang out the whole day, like just be there the whole day, or we have to do the podcast at like 10 in the morning, which I wouldn't be mad about because then I can go to the noon one.
Yeah.
Or, hold on. 2:45. That might work. But I really want to see the Dolby version, which is like either, oh, that's 10:30 p.m. I guess I could go after karaoke, right?
That's true.
Because we're going to be done at like 9-ish.
That's true.
Let me see what the seating looks like.
Yeah, but what else happened going on here?
Oh my god, that is super packed. Like the only seats are in the very, very front. Nope, not happening.
Oh no, you don't want that. Nobody wants that.
Yeah, and I mean, like if we weren't starting like at 6 o'clock or whatever the hell on Thursday, it would be fine because I could do the 3:30, but the 3:30 means that I don't get to, like, I wouldn't be there on time. Oh yeah. My God. Even the noon is almost packed up. Jesus.
Yeah. I guess this will be the first big blockbuster for the summer here, I guess.
Yeah. Well, fuck. Well, I'll figure out which one I'm going to, and then I'll let you know which or what we're doing for the thing. So, well, there's a 2:45, okay. But you're not Dolby. So yeah. Anyway,
but what X-Men? We got some of the Grant Morrison run with this episode, like a lot of.
Oh, I didn't watch it yet. I didn't watch it yet. That's what I'm doing right after this.
So, maybe instead of watching Heroes with the Wife, you should have watched X-Men 97.
No, because it came out yesterday and I didn't have time because I was driving all the time. So, it came out Wednesday. Sorry, it came out Wednesday, but I was in Ohio, and then when I came back from Ohio, I had something going on Wednesday night. I can't remember what it was. So I couldn't make it work. So.
Yeah. But it was you definitely get the if anybody was a big fan of the Grant Morrison run, you're gonna see a lot of the Easter eggs for this episode. That's what I'll say that until you get to watch it and then you can make your commentary next week, which we'll have to do two episodes. That's fair.
All right, I think I'm going to do the noon next week.
There you go.
So I'll go see the matinee nooner. The nooner. There you go. So we'll probably end up doing the podcast after that. It's buy one, get one free ticket today. Shit. Nah, I guess I'm not doing that. Anyway, I'm going to buy my ticket right now so I don't lose this spot. All right, cool. That's done. I'm going to go watch that. And then what I'll probably do is I'll probably then go to the waterfront store and do the podcast from there. Unless you want to do it at like 10 a.m.
I could do that. I'll be here. So.
Yeah. Well, because I was thinking if I do it after the movie, then it might conflict a little too tight with you getting down to karaoke if you're coming down. So, but anyway, all right, guys, thanks so much for watching. We'll see everybody. Don't forget to go to Pulp Fest this weekend. Or no, sorry, that's not this weekend. Pulp Fest is next weekend, and then we'll also be at Hall of Fame, or not Hall of Fame, Neo Comic Con up in North Olmsted next weekend as well. Cranberry on Tuesday and Wednesday next week only. We're having an extra 20 boxes of $3 Silver Age that are going to be there. Make sure you check that out. And then we're taking those boxes to Ohio with us for that show. So, yeah. Thanks again for watching, guys. We'll see everybody next week. And support your local comic shop, no matter who they are.